spontaneous applause as the DUP leader arrived at the church for the funeral of Martin McGuinness, and then a handshake between Michelle O'Neill and Arlene Foster. How significant was that yesterday? And does that now change the relationship between the DUP and Sinn Féin? That gesture from the crowd yesterday at Mr. McGuinness's funeral. What do you think? 03030 80 55 55. Good morning to you. We continue to collect your views on the late Martin McGuinness, but particularly today, what happened at his funeral. A former US president and politicians with widely opposing views came together in the Bogside for that funeral. And as the talks continue at Stormont later, how will these acts of remembrance from people with huge political differences impact on the future of Northern Ireland? The iconic photograph, one of them from yesterday, was Michelle O'Neill and Arlene Foster reaching out a hand to each other, and they grabbed each other's hand. Does that change the mood now for these talks? Does that change the discussion? Jude White is with us this morning. Malachy O'Doherty with us this morning as well. Jude, morning to you. Morning, Jude.
Good morning.
And Malachy O'Doherty, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Jude.
First of all, Malachy, your reaction to how Arlene Foster was received yesterday?
Well, it was a wonderful thing to see, absolutely. I think that and the fact that Clinton addressed her as First Minister Foster suggests that it would really be quite difficult to exclude her from the First Minister's post if we do get a deal. And I note that point was made by Squinter last night on Twitter, and Squinter probably wouldn't appreciate me telling you who he is, but you know, he's a very significant commentator from inside West Belfast on yeah. Republican issues.
Yeah. And a columnist for the Andersonstown News.
Well, you've said it. yes, a columnist for that. Yeah, he writes under Squinter in the Andersonstown News.
And he said that incredibly moving round of applause for the DUP leader makes it very difficult for Sinn Féin to continue to insist she steps aside.
That's right. And I think that's right. And I think also Clinton giving her the title First Minister, which she doesn't actually hold at the moment, he underpins that same thing. But the question is, will they reach a deal? I mean, these are political parties which make pragmatic decisions that are not based on emotion. I mean, if we go back to 98 and the Good Friday Agreement and a very similar surge of heartfelt concern that we should move on beyond sectarian division, but actually still the political parties made very, very precise calculations on what they would need following that, and it was another, 8 years, 9 years, 2007, before we actually got a secure form of devolution out of it. So Gerry Adams is saying that the new context is Brexit, the triggering of Article 50 next week, the Scottish demand for independence, and the Unionist losing their majority in the Assembly. So he's looking for something quite significant now, and he's saying that the deal has to be fixed by Monday or no deal, and rejecting direct rule, however he imagines that can be done. So he's got a plan, whatever you say. He's got a plan, and that will not necessarily be, he'll not be deflected off that by the lovely atmosphere of yesterday.
Be patient with us. I see that every line in the building is jammed at the minute. In your reaction to what happened with Arlene Foster in the church yesterday, and indeed that photograph now, that moment in time which was captured when Michelle O'Neill and Arlene Foster reached out to each other. 03030 80 55 55. Jude White, how significant do you think it was? Let's start with how Arlene Foster was received, the spontaneous round of applause.
I think in view of many of her comments about the nationalist community over the last year, it was a very, very warm gesture. I believe it was spontaneous, and I believe it was sincere. I'm not quite sure whether the people in that church per se are representative of the broad nationalist or Republican, but it was a very, very warm moment, and I welcome it as I welcome her attendance at the funeral of the late Martin McGinn, very much so, yes.
Brian and Lambeg, let's take the first call of the day. Morning to you, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. It really should be the sign of progress being allowed to happen. The only problem is there's one large stumbling block we have in Northern Ireland, and that's Gerry Adams. Gerry Adams has no interest in Northern Ireland progressing. How can he call for a united Ireland if Northern Ireland works? He's still there pulling the strings. He had a harder time doing it when Martin McGuinness was there because Martin was his equal. Whenever Gerry now has his underlings like Michelle O'Neill and Mary Lou McDonald, he needs to be the one that needs to be doing the moving in this country.
Let's have a listen to what Gerry Adams said at Martin McGuinness's graveside yesterday.
Martin McGuinness was not a terrorist. Martin McGuinness was a freedom fighter. He was also a political prisoner, a negotiator, a peacemaker, a healer.
Maliki, there were no paramilitary trappings at that funeral yesterday.
And that is a breach of Republican tradition, really. I mean, in the past, there have been IRA funerals where there haven't been trappings because the family specifically requested. But I think that, you know, Adams and others who would have been part of that discussion would have been sensitive to the broader political context. It would have been a very, very difficult thing to for Arlene Foster and others, even President Higgins, to have been there had this been an ordinary traditional IRA funeral. So that showed some spirit of accommodation, and that showed that they wanted Martin McGuinness to be recognised as a statesman with a broader responsibility than merely the legacy of the provisional IRA.
I wonder if that's where we're at now, Jude White. Are we in a spirit of accommodation? It's amazing actually I'm asking that question given the hinterland of the last couple of weeks and the very confrontational language between those two big parties. But I wonder, has the mood now changed?
It's actually hard to gauge because it is, I mean, we're literally, I suppose, one day on. It can't be underestimated. And I firmly believe, or certainly I hope, that Arlene Foster didn't go there out of for some political reason or out of political cynicism. She went there and she was working with somebody for 10 years who she genuinely wanted to pay her respects to. What actually happened yesterday has, I think, to be taken into context. The more raw and realistic appraisal, perhaps, of yesterday, I regret to say to you, Stephen, it's probably your first caller there from Lisburn who, in my view, has a completely incorrect analysis, but that's probably in the mind of people. What is actually the big issue now over the next few days is the red line that Sinn Féin have set about Arlene Foster's position. Will it soften? Can they do a deal on it? Can they agree a set of principles, for example, how they can work with Arlene Foster while this investigation goes on? It was a change yesterday. I wouldn't say it was seismic, but it was a change. And it's now the ball, I believe, now is in the court of Sinn Féin to respond to this in some way. And they've got a lot of hard thinking to do this weekend because they have clearly stated again and again and again that they will not go into government unless Arlene Foster steps aside. And
Adams,
I believe they're going to have...
Adams has already said, Jude, that comes at the end of the discussion because at the end of the negotiations you get the running of Dohaunt or the nominating of the ministers. So actually you need to get the deal agreed before you get to the point where the question even arises of whether Arlene takes that position. So they will find, you know, if they get a deal agreed, they will find a way to save Arlene. I'm sure of that now. But will they get a deal agreed?
Why are you sure of that now?
Well, I think that the mood in Derry just makes it really easy for them to get off that hook because it's a hook for them too. It's you know if they go in and if they get a deal agreed. I mean, you had Judith Thompson, the victims commissioner, just on the news a moment ago, saying that there's already draft legislation in place to deal with the legacy issues. You know, I mean, that's clearly something quite significant has happened already. So, but
there's absolutely no chance of that ever being agreed. I mean, I think you know that. There's no chance.
Then you're not going to get a deal by Monday. And therefore, the question doesn't even arise whether you get the nomination of Eileen Foster.
Fran Belfast. Morning, Fran.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I phoned up because I was quite surprised in many respects when I saw Arlene Foster at Martin McGuinness's funeral yesterday, and I couldn't help but think it was a political expediency. I genuinely feel that Arlene Foster went to the funeral yesterday and as an act of political expediency. The DUP and Arlene Foster want to see the Volk government returned here, and as part of that, it would have been almost unconscionable not to have gone to the funeral when they're trying to facilitate a way out of the political empire.
Tony Blair didn't go.
Found themselves in. Who didn't go?
Tony Blair didn't go.
Right.
How difficult must it have been for Arlene Foster to go to that funeral yesterday?
I believe she
went. The IRA tried to kill her father.
Yes, Stephen. I believe she didn't go because personally, she wanted to go there. I believe that she may be growing into the leader that the DUP need going forward. I believe that that was a leadership decision on behalf of the DUP as opposed to a personal decision of Arlene Foster reaching out to nationalism and the people that she may feel were responsible for the greater part of the troubles during her life as she grew up.
And that image of both Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill, both of them reaching out to each other. Like, think about the message behind that. If it indeed does mean anything beyond what happened yesterday.
Yes, but Stephen, what image does that portray? I'm just trying to call what I believe would be kind of a reality check here. It would be very, very, very easy, very simplistic, and maybe very diversionary to actually sit and say there was the leader of the Democratic Unionist Party, the people who kind of forswore in the past that they wouldn't be involved in power sharing, sitting down with a leader, the modern-day leader with no military kind of past connected to the IRA or any of the actions that they carried out. You have those two people reaching across at a funeral, shaking hands. This we're not in some nirvana post Good Friday Agreement where we're entering into a new political kind of panacea.
So you think it meant nothing?
We're reaching out. No, I think I have genuinely stated that I think it was a political expediency on behalf of the DUP, and that's how I would read that.
Thank you.
And they want to go forward, and that's how they're trying to manage it.
Thanks for your call this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. We'll talk to Nicola Mallon now, the SDLP MLA. Good morning to you, Nicola.
Good morning.
What's your sense, Nicola? Would it be more difficult now, given what happened at the funeral yesterday? So Michelle O'Neill and indeed Sinn Féin were welcoming the fact that by that gesture of their leader reaching out to Arlene Foster, they're clearly welcoming the fact that Arlene Foster was at Martin McGuinness's funeral. Is it therefore more difficult for them to politically pillory Arlene Foster now, given that iconic image yesterday? They were reaching out to each other.
Well, it's not for me to second guess or to preempt Sinn Féin's positions or thoughts in these matters. I certainly think it was a positive move by Arlene. I think the handshake was positive, but I think it's important to also point out that when we were in the chamber earlier in the week to commemorate Martin McGuinness's passing, Arlene Foster did cross the chamber and shook hands with Michelle O'Neill then. So there has been some magnanimity shown on both sides, and I think that the very telling response was the warm round of applause for Arlene when she entered the church yesterday, because I don't underestimate that it was difficult for her, but it was the right thing to do. But the key thing is, how do we translate the positive imagery from yesterday into concrete actions over the next few days, which are critical in terms of getting political agreement and getting the executive up and running with genuine power sharing at the heart of it by 4 p.m. on Monday? We don't have much time. I know we in the SDLP have been very frustrated at the lack of progress. We've been very frustrated that we haven't had the opportunity to sit around the table with everyone at the same time to thrash out some of the difficult issues. I mean, today we're only 3 days out and we still don't, at this moment in time, have a definitive agenda of meetings for today. So I think we need to...
There's no agenda. There's no agenda for meetings for today.
No, we've been sent indications that there'll be meetings from 11, but beyond that, there's no concrete detail. And for us, that is worrying. And as I said, we have been frustrated at the lack of progress to date. But in all of these things, they move slowly at the beginning, and there is a lot of momentum that gathers towards the end and the crunch time. We're in the crunch time. And we need to all step it up again.
Such is the nature of these, Malik. If we look at past negotiations, it's often slow at the start and then a lot happens running up to the deadline.
It's crazy the way they do these things. It's crazy the way they did the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, Clinton did it again at Sharm el-Sheikh, you know, where they end up having people sitting up all night, you know, and losing sleep, and it's all about, putting so much pressure on people and hyping up the whole thing that it's the moral context that really matters. And it is the wrong way to do it. There were faults in the Good Friday Agreement because of the way that it was done. And if we do this again, I hope for Nicola's sake, you know, they're not going to end up having to stay up all night on Monday and work through this and then take a call from Clinton or Trump or somebody at 4 in the morning, because it's a ludicrous way to conduct business of this kind. And yet they come back over and over again to doing it in this way.
You mentioned Bill Clinton there. Let's have a listen to what the former US president had to say yesterday.
He expanded the definition of us and shrunk the definition of them. I want to say a special word of appreciation to First Minister Foster for being here, because because I know, and most people in this church know, that your life has been marked in painful ways by the Troubles. I can just hear him now. Here's my eulogy. I fought, I made peace, I made politics. I had a fabulous family that somehow stayed with me and endured it all. I had friends. I was married to Jerry almost as long as I was married to Bernie. Turned out I was pretty good at all this, and we got a lot done. But we didn't finish. And if you really want to honor my legacy, go make your own and finish. Finish the work of peace so we can all have a future together. Our friend earned this vast crowd today. Even more. He earned the right to ask us to honor his legacy by our living, to finish the work that is there to be done. God bless you. Thank you.
Your reaction today, 0303 80 55 55. William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Why they make a big deal of what's obvious? Arlene Foster needed to go there, and Michelle needed to welcome there in front of the ex-president. What were you going to say if you'd done anything different? Why do they make a big deal of what's obvious? It's the underlying things, but I'm not sure
it was obvious that she had to go. She was saying a day before, until the Belfast Telegraph published it on their front page, that she was undecided.
Well, let's take your logic then. Let's take your... She doesn't go. She's seen as she doesn't want to move the process forward. And if Michelle doesn't welcome her, she's seen that she doesn't
Come on, William. You have heard over recent days, no doubt, the very genuine outpouring of emotion from both sides. So those sides who saw Mr. McGuinness in one light and what he did to contribute towards peace in Northern Ireland, and the other, the very raw, real human pain... from those people who resent what Mr. McGuinness stood for when he was in charge of an organisation, a senior commander in an organisation which killed their loved ones.
There was no brownie points for anybody who didn't go, and there was no brownie points for anybody who didn't welcome them.
Is this not beyond brownie points? No.
Not two women brownie points. That's all it was for the president. And not to be seen to the wider parts of Europe and the world that they're not in for going forward. An obvious thing. Obvious.
Okay, so you're skeptical. You're skeptical, William. Michael and Derry, are you?
No, Stephen, not at all. I was at Martin's funeral yesterday, Stephen, and I thought that the welcome that Arlene Foster got in Derry was amazing and proper. I think the handshake with Michelle O'Neill herself in and all along to her church was iconic and very, very important.
Why iconic?
Because, Stephen, it's... Look, no matter what people think of Martin McGuinness, I'll say to your researchers, for a long, long time, Martin was the bogeyman of a unionist, loyalist population, and that's their business. I'm not here to condemn anybody because that's not what I'm about. Martin is gone, and Stephen, you know, wouldn't it be funny if Martin McGuinness was in the time that we have in the next few days, wouldn't it be funny if Martin McGuinness's death and funeral finally brought our peoples together? Because there is no them and us, Stephen. There's only us, and there always has only been us. But it's time, you know, I know people are sceptical, and it scares me sometimes, but it was very important yesterday that those two ladies shook hands, because, Stephen, they are our first and deputy first ministers as we move forward. And
well, of course, technically at the moment they're not.
I know they're not, I know that, but please God, Stephen, they will be, and please God we'll get something sorted out for ourselves, to get all my things. Martin McGuinness, as I said, people had different opinions of Martin Goderes. He saw a man that rest in peace. It's just a strange one I'm thinking here this morning, as I always listen to your show. Just maybe Martin's death on the week that he died, I'm not saying it was deliberate, if you know what I mean, Stephen, but the week that he died and the pressure that they're all under in Stormont, maybe Martin's funeral maybe just pushed that wee bit forward, Stephen.
Stay there, Michael. Have you been convinced, William?
Convinced of what, Stephen? I'm convinced that we need a peace process. I'm convinced we need to move forward. And I'm convinced that these two women need to go towards each other for the good of Northern Ireland. That's what I'm convinced of. And what I seen yesterday, I could be cynical as you accuse me. I could say the real funeral was at the plot where Mr. Adams was, right? The other was a bit of a showpiece. Now, but I want Northern Ireland to move forward. I want Arling and I want Michelle to get their act together and get this wee country moving.
And so do you think, Michael, that they should each drop their red lines, their political red lines against each other? Was that a threshold moment yesterday, or actually was that a moment in time, it's passed and now back to the political reality? You know, the DUP have not rolled back from their red line publicly that... there will never be an Irish Language Act under Arlene Foster's watch. Arlene Foster herself said it. I haven't heard that being retracted. Sinn Féin have not retracted their position that they will not go into a government with Arlene Foster as a designated appointee for First Minister. But do you want them to roll back from that now after yesterday?
Aye. Yes, Stephen.
Or not?
Yes, Stephen, see these red lines. Look, you and I could sit and decide that I'm a Roman Catholic and that you're not, and we're never going to speak to each other and never the twain shall meet. Look, Stephen, we've had that for long enough here. See these red lines? Let's just jump over these red lines. I know people are saying, I'm like, I love Irish as a language, but look, Stephen, and I know there's issue with RHI and all that, but look, Stephen, we have to get a government here in our country. Now, this thing about red lines, these are all stumbling blocks. You know, I sat and listened to one of your montages the other day of Dr. Paisley, God rest his soul, and Martin McGuinness, God rest his soul, and they were asked how they were getting on, and Paisley said, no surrender, not an inch and all this, right? And it was a joke. But it had showed that they had went past red lines.
Michael, thank you. Stephen and Oma. Morning, Stephen.
Morning. I agree with your last caller there, Stephen. I think it's time that we move on and get rid of the red lines. Arlene Foster yesterday made a very, very big statement, and I believe personally that she went there, first of all, as a human being and not as a party leader. And I think it's wrong of us to sit and speculate whether or not she was there on behalf of the party, whether it was for political gain. Martin dead. He's gone. It's time that we picked up his legacy and moved on.
What's his legacy?
Peace. He wanted peace in his country.
And Jimmy in Malile. Morning, Jimmy.
Hello, Stephen. Just phoning in a quick comment because I know I haven't long before the news, but you started this story this morning with Adam's comments yesterday.
We didn't actually. We started with the applause that Arlene Foster was greeted with when she took her seat in the church.
Yeah, it was brought in. Adam's was brought in. Everyone will have their own opinions, as will I. I think the talk in the months ahead will be legacy. Again, there'll be many different views, Stephen, but my thoughts on Jerry's comments yesterday regarding Martin not being a terrorist. Stephen, it was Martin's unit and Claudie who walked past an eight-year-old child cleaning windows. That wasn't a military target, okay? They knew that child would be killed. No military target. Can you or any, even decent Republican, genuinely tell me that them actions aren't the actions of a terrorist? That's not a military target. That's not a freedom fighter, Stephen. Knowing you're going to blow an eight-year-old child up who's cleaning windows in a shop street, knowing when you're walking by with a bomb in your arm, can you put your hand on heart or anybody, even a lifelong Republican, and tell me that is the actions of a freedom fighter?
Some people might say what happens in other places in the world when the British Army and indeed the Americans and other administrations, which some people respect, or they drop bombs from up on high.
So is that
and use drones?
Is that a way of somebody trying to justify the fact that what Martin McGuinness is? People done because of what's happening all around the world. We're talking about Martin McGuinness here, not Afghanistan, not Iraq, not Aleppo. We're talking about Martin McGuinness. And as I say, the comments made by Gerry Adams that he wasn't a terrorist. Well, if he wasn't a terrorist, what do you call the actions of people knowing they were going to blow up an eight-year-old child cleaning their father's shop windows? What name would you give to that, Stephen? If that's not a terrorist. That wasn't a military target. That's kids, children. What name? Is that a freedom fighter, Stephen? Now, I would maybe take a different view. I wouldn't think it's right. I would take a different view. I could see where they were coming from. If it was a military target, if it was two British soldiers, I wouldn't say it was right. I wouldn't agree. But I could understand it. I'm a unionist. But I can understand their thinking behind it. But I can't understand their thinking of blowing up eight-year-old children and then coming out and saying that they're not terrorists. That is the actions of a freedom fighter. So I defy anybody to come onto this show and tell me that was the actions of a freedom fighter and not a terrorist.